Good morning. What a great song to lead us into our lesson this morning. I didn't talk to Rick. I don't know if he saw the email or what I put on Facebook, but we're going to talk about some storms this morning. I invite you to open your Bibles to the book of Matthew chapter 14, and we'll read a story there about a storm in just a moment. Matthew chapter 14. While you're turning there, just a few brief announcements here before we get into our lesson. One is, sitting there in the back, is our brother Philip Christopher, and we are just so happy to see him. He, of course, is going through chemo and battling cancer, and it's good to see you, and we just want to continue to pray for Philip. And then, of course, we don't want to go any farther without mentioning what we just did a few moments ago with our collection. You know, we see in the New Testament we're commanded to lay by and store, but we're commanded to take up a collection, as it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, for the needy saints. We have some saints, as we'll look at here in just a few moments with this lesson, that are needy. We have saints in Texas specifically, and we haven't heard of much in Tampa or the state of Florida. But we were able to talk with Tony Mock when he was here this last week for our gospel meeting, get some names of churches and some individuals that are in need of assistance. And that's the point of the church, the group of God's people. Take care of each other. That's the example we see in the New Testament. And so what we did was we are donating all the collections done today to those needy saints who have been affected by the hurricane, Hurricane Harvey. And it's just a wonderful thing to see Christians doing that for each other, again, as we see in the New Testament. And then lastly, next week I'll be out of town. I get to go preach a gospel meeting in Danville, Kentucky. It's kind of my origin story, if I can call it that. That's where I had my very first internship, almost 10 years ago now. And so I'm excited to go there and preach for them. Steve will be preaching in my absence next week, and I think that if you're here next week, you'll benefit from that. Again, we just mentioned Hurricane Harvey, and as you can tell by the screen, we're going to talk about some storms. I thought it was appropriate to take a break from our theme of serve one another and just talk about some things that have happened this last week or these last several weeks, really. Christians are meeting today for the first time in Florida. They canceled their services last week because they were devastated by Hurricane Irma. And, of course, several weeks ago, at the end of August, we had Hurricane Harvey come and hit really South Texas and even parts of Louisiana. I'm going to put some pictures on the screen as I talk for just a moment. And I just want you to look and listen as we kind of just start this morning on maybe a sober note, but it will hopefully brighten up as we go on. When you look at these pictures, that's an actual photograph of Hurricane Harvey right before it started to hit Southeast Texas. And it's hard to imagine how much rain fell that weekend. It's said that from 11 a.m. on Friday through 11 a.m. Central Time on that next Monday, Harvey dropped an average of 27 inches across parts of Texas. Now, some saw as much as 50 inches, and some saw a little bit less. But it's just amazing to think about how much rain. That's more rain than most of the western half of the country has seen all year. And they got it in one weekend. It's estimated that Harvey produced over 21 trillion gallons of water. Coupled with winds over 120 miles an hour, levees and dams breaking, the flooding was historic and it was catastrophic. The latest numbers that I could find this past week are saying that 82 are dead from Hurricane Harvey. 72,000 people had to be rescued because their homes were flooded or they were abandoned in their cars as the floodwaters came. 450,000 will need funds for disaster assistance. Many people are still without homes, without power. I'm still even seeing friends from Florida that their power is just getting back on. And you look at this, and I'm just going to go back to this one right here. Some of you might have seen this one. That's Interstate 10. Interstate 10 is one of the biggest interstates from California to the East Coast. I believe it goes through Jacksonville. I've driven on Interstate 10. I have it on a time, so it keeps skipping forward here. I'm going to go back one more time. That Interstate 10 is about 5 to 6 lanes on either side. It's about a 10 to 12 lane highway. And you look at how much water was there white capping. It's hard to imagine how much water really, really came from this storm. And of course, it's not just Hurricane Harvey. It was not long after Irma came through and did much of the same to residents of the Caribbean and the state of Florida. And many of you have even been through much of the same thing, maybe not a hurricane, but we have been through tornadoes. If I just say the year 2014, several of you remember the 23 tornadoes that ripped through Alabama. That's the same exact day Brooke and I were scheduled to move here. We were getting ready to get on a plane, and we got text from several of you saying, you might want to wait one more day. And we did, and we're glad we did, because it was a horrific day. If I say, and this might even be bigger in some of your memories, if I say April 27, 2011, you remember those storms. You remember that 62 tornadoes killed 254 people in the state of Alabama. Some of you, if I say April 3rd, 1974, 10 tornadoes killed 77 in Alabama. We have certain days and certain memories in our minds and certain storms because it's when those storms come when tragedy strikes. And it's when tragedy strikes that some different things happen. You might see the worst in some people. You might see the best in some people. You will see horrific scenes. You will see people fall away and die. But also with storms come great stories of success, of heroism, and of generosity. But can you imagine? One day you're living your life. Everything is completely normal. You know, here in Alabama, you don't get much warning for tornadoes. They might tell you there's going to be some weather that could produce tornadoes. It might be some big ones, so we might want to take shelter. But until that tornado hits, we have no idea. But can you imagine just one day, life as you know it, going along like nothing is wrong, and then something hits, something strikes that is so catastrophic, and it flips your world upside down, maybe for the rest of your life. Maybe as some of these people, they didn't lose their life, but they've lost cherished possessions. Maybe they've lost their homes. Homes can be rebuilt. And their lives will go on, but there will always be something reminding them of that storm. You know, storms in life happen. All of us have different storms in life. All of us will have different things go on in our lives where maybe it seems like one minute everything is going along just fine, and the next minute that storm hits and just bad things start to happen. And I want you to think about some things in your life that might be considered your storm. Maybe your storm can be a major life event. Like maybe you've started to doubt your faith. Maybe you have fallen away. Maybe you're getting a terminal diagnosis, or maybe you're watching a loved one pass away and lose their life. Maybe you've lost a job. Maybe you've lost a job and you've been jobless for an extended period of time. Maybe you've had to move to an unfamiliar place. Those can be storms. Maybe some of those are a little minor than others I just mentioned, but those can still be major storms in people's lives. Maybe your storm is spiritual in nature. As I said just a moment ago, maybe you're beginning to doubt your faith, beginning to doubt God. Maybe you have fallen away from the Lord's group of people. Maybe you've stopped coming to church or have contemplated, what good is church for me? What good is my faith for me? Maybe your family member has some of those questions. And you're watching a family member struggle with their spiritual faith. Maybe your storms are sinful in nature. Maybe you're dealing with things like sexual lusts, or drunkenness, or lying, or gossip, or pride. Maybe your storm is spiritual and sinful in nature. Or maybe your storm is maybe not necessarily sinful, but it's just some feelings you have. Maybe you have feelings of guilt for different things you've done in your past, and you're trying to weather that storm. Maybe you just can't seem to forgive somebody, or you forgive them, but you still maybe hold some hard feelings towards them who have wronged you. Maybe you're just feeling depressed. Maybe you go through anxiety. Whatever it is, it might not be sinful. Maybe it's just feelings that you have. And there's so many things that you, when you look at this list, that can fall into all these different categories of what different kinds of storms we all go through. And here's the thing that we need to understand. My storm that I might be going through is not going to be your storm. You will be affected by different things than I am. But every single person in here, maybe not the children so much, but every single person in here is weathering something. Is being attacked by some sort of storm. In some way, shape, or form, we are all going through something. The storms are all around us. Sometimes it feels like the storms just keep coming. I saw a photograph of Hurricane Irma. And right behind it, I don't know the names of the other ones, but right behind Irma, it says that there was two more getting ready to ramp up. And for a while, they were on the same path towards the Caribbean and towards Florida. I think they've since turned. But sometimes that's what life feels like. A big storm comes, and it hits. Well, guess what's right behind it? Another storm. Brooke just told me of one of her friends from college yesterday that I went to school with her as well, but Brooke knew her a little bit better. Her and her husband, they actually left Florida during Hurricane Irma, not because they were trying to evacuate, but because his father passed away. And so they drove north to go be at the father's funeral, and they just thought while they're up there, they'll wait out the storm, and then they'll go back home. Well, as soon as they got back home, they realized that their apartment, because of the storms and the electrical lines that were down, had caught on fire, and they lost everything. Brooke said, can you imagine what they're going through? To lose a father, and then to want to go back home and realize you've lost everything? And sometimes that's what life feels like. It's just one storm after another, after another, after another. Sometimes they come when we least expect them. Sometimes it's a tragic death in the family, or like that family who returned home and they realized they lost everything. They weren't expecting it. Those storms are sudden. They hit, almost like a tornado. But then sometimes we see the storms coming. We know the difficult days are ahead. We know that that it's just right around the corner. It's like the hurricanes. I had friends that spent weeks getting ready for the hurricanes. Once they saw what happened in Florida, I had friends in Florida. Man, they were bagging things up. They were putting their furniture up on cinder blocks. They were moving furniture up to the top stories of their houses because they were getting ready. Because they knew the storm was coming, they just had to wait for it. Sometimes that's what our storms are like. And yet other times there's just nothing that we can do to prepare for the storms. And maybe as much as we know the storms are coming, you just can't prepare for them. Have you ever lost a loved one? Have you ever lost a loved one that you knew it was coming? Maybe they had spent years suffering. Maybe they were just old in age and you know that their time was coming soon. It's still not easy. Even though maybe we know the storms are coming, there's just not anything we can really do to prepare for when they impact us and when they hit. And yet when we go through our storms, when we go through all these things, sometimes it feels like we're sinking. Sometimes it feels like we're just gasping for every breath of air we can get. Sometimes we're trying to stand tall, we're trying to look good, we're trying to play the part, but the winds just keep knocking us down over and over and over again. Sometimes we're just trying to keep our head above water, but it seems like the water keeps rising, and the more I try to reach for air, the more the water just seems to cover our heads. And eventually what we get to is we just get to the point where we want to give up. We just get to the point where the storms are so powerful that we just feel like we can't hold on any longer, and it's just time for me to give up. Because all these things that we see, these major life events, they're difficult. The sins that we have to go through, the doubt and the fear of maybe our spiritual faith that we have to go through, all these things, they take their toll. And eventually, the easy thing to do is just let go. Give in to the storm, because it's just easier. I had you turn to Matthew chapter 14, because this is exactly what we see happen to Peter. It's one of my favorite stories of Peter. It's one of my favorite stories of Jesus, because Peter was doing something that nobody else had ever done besides Jesus, and that's walk on water, but yet there was still something in the back of his mind, and it was a storm. Start reading with me in Matthew 14 and verse 22. It says, immediately, now this is after the feeding of the 5,000, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost," and they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said to him, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." I want you to imagine here for just a moment, as we just walk through this story for a second. Jesus sends his disciples away. He puts his apostles on the boat. They go out into the sea. Jesus goes to pray. And as Jesus is praying later that night, he decides to go meet his apostles out on the boat. Well, the boat's in the middle of the sea, and as it says in the text, the boat in verse 24 was now in the midst of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. They were in the middle of a storm. We don't see any rain in this storm, but the wind was so heavy, the boat was going back and forth, and the waves were beginning to maybe even white cap, which has been known to happen on the Sea of Galilee. And they were just being rocked back and forth, and Jesus starts walking out to the boat, and they become afraid. One, I guarantee you they were afraid because of what would happen to them in the storm on the boat. That we see in another story as well, when the storm and the waves were crashing over the boat. Remember, they came to Jesus because they were afraid for their lives. No doubt they were probably questioning some of the same things and afraid for their lives. But now they see this mysterious figure out on the water. And Jesus, it's almost like he has a sense of humor. Like, let me go scare them a little bit. You know, let me go walk on water in the middle of this big old storm. That's how scary movies start, in my opinion. But Jesus comes walking out on water and they're all scared. And they say, "This is a ghost." He says, "I'm not a ghost. Be of good cheer, it's I, don't be afraid." And so Peter says, "Lord, if it is you, let me come out to you." So Jesus says, "Yes, come on." I'm going to stop right here for a minute, because here in the middle of a storm, Peter has enough sense to stop, say, if that really is Jesus, Jesus has the power, I can come out to him. He almost has no doubt in his mind that Peter can walk on water because Jesus will allow him to do that. And let's not forget, the boat is rocking back and forth, the text tells us in verse 24, because the waves and the wind was contrary. So Peter's in this boat rocking back and forth, back and forth. The wind is blowing so hard, the waves are crashing up onto the boat, and he has enough nerve, because he thinks that's Jesus out there, to step out of the boat and start walking on water. And let's give Peter just a little bit of credit, because that's an amazing thing. And we can look at Peter, this story, if we stopped, this would be a great story if we stopped right there. What a great story. Peter walks on water. What an amazing thing. The faith that Peter had to have. And we would hail Peter as someone who just had all the faith in the world to believe in God during the storm. But that's not what happens. Because as Peter is walking on water and doing something so miraculous, I've never been able to walk on water. And I feel like if I ever had that opportunity, I would be in so much disbelief that nothing else around me would matter, because I'm standing on water. We used to, growing up, whenever we got to go swimming in a pool, we would run off the diving board and we'd kick our feet as fast as we could, see how many times we can kind of hit our feet across the water. And I thought maybe one time it would just stick and I'd just scoot right along, but nope, never. Because we can't walk on water. But yet Peter did. But yet something happened. In verse 30 it says, when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And it wasn't that he was just afraid. But when he became afraid, Peter starts to sink. Doesn't that describe so many of us? That before the storms come, and maybe the storm wasn't so bad yet in Peter's mind because there was Jesus there and Jesus could see us through anything. But yet as soon as he took his eyes off Jesus and he starts noticing the wind and the waves and everything crashing on around him, he becomes afraid. And to me, that's one of the key parts of what it says there. He took his eyes off Jesus. He started looking. It says, when he saw, which tells me he took his eyes off the person that was making him do this incredible thing, and he started putting his eyes on everything else around him. And when he saw that the wind was boisterous, that's when he became afraid. And so when he took his eyes off Jesus and put his eyes on everything around him, that he began to sink. And he began, as Jesus tells us, that's when he began to doubt. Because Jesus would reprimand him in verse 31, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" That's, to me, what makes this story so great. It would be a great story if we stopped with Peter just walking on water, going to Jesus. They walk hand in hand back to the boat, get back on the boat. What a great story of faith. But Jesus, this was a different story. Because Jesus is showing us, storms are going to come. Keep your eyes on me. Peter began to sink because he saw what was going on around him. But Peter did do something that I think many people forget to do during their storms. Peter, he asked for help. Peter would just simply ask for help. In verse 30, it says that he cried out, "Lord, save me." He still believed that Jesus was Lord, and "Lord, save me." And it says immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "O you of little faith." Jesus saved him. He realized he couldn't survive on his own. I often wonder how much time went on between Jesus or Peter sinking and crying out for help. Was it an immediate, he just plunged right into the water? Was it like he was being slowly dipped in? You know, that sometimes you see like in the movies, people just slowly being dipped in, like Han Solo when he's about to be frozen in carbonite, you know. What was it? Did he have time to just kind of realize what's going on? Hold on, I'm sinking. Or was it just, hey, doubt came and boom, he's in the water. And how much time did it take for him to realize, I'm drowning, I can't do this, the waves are too much, this is too much work for me, this is too much trouble, I need some help. And immediately he says he cried out to Jesus, "Lord, save me." And in verse 31 it says, immediately Jesus stretched out. Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, pulled Peter up. And I love how Jesus decides to have this conversation before they get back in the boat. Stretched out his hand, caught Peter, pulled him back up, I'm sure, and decides to have a little conversation. Peter, no doubt, probably wants to just get back in the boat at this time, because he's probably scared and cold and wet. And Jesus decides to talk to him. "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Jesus still completely calm, trying to use this as a teaching moment in the middle of a storm. "Why did you doubt?" You can almost hear the words in Jesus' mind. "You were just walking on water. Why did you begin to doubt? You had just one of these great moments of faith where you said, Jesus, if that's you, let me come to you. You got out of the boat, Peter. The winds and the waves, they were crashing all around you. You got out of the boat. You decided to walk. None of the other disciples did that." Notice that none of the other disciples were reprimanded like Peter was, even though they stayed in the boat. I think that's interesting too. Peter had this great act of faith to get out of the boat, yet he was the one reprimanded. Why? Because he started to doubt. He took his eyes off Jesus. And it was when they got back in the boat that they all began to worship, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." I think they realized that Jesus was their safety. In the time of storms, Jesus was the one that would immediately stretch out their hand to them and pull them to safety. He's the Son of God. You know, we need to understand a couple things, not just about the story, but about our life. And we'll make some references to this story as we go forward this morning. But we need to understand that if we're going to deal with our storms, we need to understand that, storms are coming. I mentioned that briefly just a moment ago, so I'm not going to go deep into this one here. But storms are coming. We all have the storms that we go through. And sometimes what we do is we try to put on a brave face, just like Peter did. We try to say, I'm going to face this storm head on. I'm going to keep my faith in Jesus. I'm not going to waver. I can fight this. I can beat this. Whatever it is, we put on the brave face and we're going to fight whatever storm comes our way. I had several friends and family members, and I would just sit there and say, okay, well, I hope that something bad doesn't happen. We would call some of our friends and ask, you know, do y'all need a place to stay? Are y'all going to evacuate Florida? Do you need a place to stay? Nope, we're just going to brave it out. Okay. That's all good. I mean, if we want to put on that brave face and brave it out, that's great. But you know what most, I shouldn't say most, but I have heard reports that a good number of the deaths in Hurricane Harvey in Texas were people that were just going to brave it out. And it got a little worse than they thought. Or people, even people, and I'll tell you a story in just a moment. People that decided, that told them, yeah, it's not going to be that bad. They tried to be brave. They tried to be strong. It's not going to be that bad. Even some people would drive through some standing water. It's not that bad. They get stuck. And guess what happens when they try to get out of the car? They get carried off. Storms are coming. And sometimes the storms are stronger than what we think. And sometimes in the middle of the storms, they get so strong and so tough that yes, we had the brave face on before, and we could do this all on our own, but we realize very fast that during those storms, we need God more than ever. Sadly, some people never come to that conclusion. Sometimes they pay with their life. But we just need to understand storms are coming. And they're not something to take lightly. We can put the brave face on. We can brave it out, as we like to say. But to me, I just don't want to take that chance. If I know a tornado's coming, I'm probably here at the church building because you can call me a wimp. I don't care. The house I live in has been there since 1948. Tornado hasn't hit it yet, but it only takes once for me to say, I'm going to brave it out, and my house gets hit, and I'm done. So I'd rather be somewhere where there's shelter and there's safety because I don't want to take my chances. The storms are coming, and sometimes they're stronger than we expect. And because of that, we need to be prepared. We need to be alert. I was in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts all growing up, and there's a motto that we have. Some of you maybe have been through that. I think even the Girl Scouts have the same motto, if I'm not mistaken. But be prepared. And we were always taught, be prepared. And so we would go on our camping trips, and as we were packing, they would always put something on the packing list. Be prepared. And so we were taught to make sure we had everything. I still, to this day, pack too many pairs of socks and too many pairs of underwear and too many shirts and too many whatever it is because I just want to be prepared. I don't know. I pack too much, and Brooke kind of looks at me sometimes, and I take up most of the suitcase, and I'm the guy, and I probably pack more clothes than her because I just want to be prepared. I never know what's going to happen. There's a guy I like to follow on Facebook. I know some of you do, too, because we joke about it. But Brad Travis over in Huntsville, he's one of the weathermen, I think, for NBC. And he says, be weather alert. That's what he says when storms come. Be weather alert. Just be weather alert. Just be on the lookout. Don't be one of these people that are caught off guard. Keep your eyes on what's going on. Make sure that you're alert and you are prepared. That doesn't mean that the storm is going to miss us. It doesn't mean that the storms won't affect us. The storms will still come. But the more we can be aware of the storms that are brewing and that are on the horizon, the better prepared we are to handle them. I mentioned just a moment ago, Hurricane Irma, I had people on Facebook and some of my friends, they were stocking up on water. They were packing their irreplaceable objects. They were moving furniture to higher floors in the house. They were getting generators and flashlights and food so that when the power went out, they would be well taken care of. They were prepared. They were alert. The storms still hit them. Their power went out, and guess what? They were okay. They still had lights. They still had food. They still had water. Maybe their houses were flooded, but you know what? The things they wanted to keep safe, because they were prepared, they kept them safe. They took the time beforehand to get ready. Now, what does this have to do with the storms that we face and with God? Turn with me to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 5. I want you to notice what he writes there. We all know these verses, starting in verse 6. It says, "Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to His eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you." Peter is talking to Christians in the middle of storms. These Christians were being persecuted. They were being killed. They were being disrespected, all because they believe in Jesus Christ. They were in the middle of some pretty intense storms in their spiritual life. And yet, Peter gives them a reminder. He says, turn to God, first of all. Just like Peter, when he first walked on water, he says, "Jesus, if it is you," he had enough faith to step out of that boat and start walking. His eyes were on Jesus. And when Peter writes, he says, "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God." First and foremost, we have to turn to God, humble ourselves before God. And it's God that will exalt us in due time. He says, "Cast all your care upon Him, for He cares for you." You know, sometimes when we're going through our storms and when we're going through all the difficulties we have in life, not all of our storms are going to be rain and tornadoes. As I said on a previous slide, we all go through different things in this life. And Peter here reminds the people, you can cast your cares upon God. If you humble yourself before God, if you become a servant of God, you can cast all your cares on Him. You can go to Him in prayer. You can talk to Him. You can tell Him what you need, and God will take care of you. Why? Peter answers, because He cares for you. What an amazing thing to know that the Almighty God, who is sitting in heaven, He's a God that cares. He cares for us. And because of that, we can go to Him and give Him all of our cares and all of our worries. But He doesn't stop there. And this is the point of what I want to make it with this be prepared. Immediately after that, immediately after in verse 8, be sober, be vigilant. Some of your versions will say, be alert, be watchful, some of your versions might say. Why? Because your adversary, the devil. Because the devil is out there. He walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now, I'm going to switch metaphors here. Because your adversary, the devil, is a raging storm, seeking whom he may devour. There's a roaring lion out there. He doesn't care if you know he's coming or not. I've made that point several times before, and I've made it wrong. You know, we watch National Geographic Channel or Discovery Channel, and the devil's out there, and we always say the devil, he creeps up on his prey, and he stays very quiet. They don't even know the lion's there. And at the last second, he pounces and gets what he wants. That's not what Peter tells us. He says the devil is walking about like a roaring lion. He is walking about. He doesn't care if you see him or not. He's roaring. He's letting you know he's coming. He is a raging storm coming for us. And so Peter tells us, because the devil is out there, because we've already given ourselves to God, we've humbled ourselves before Him, we've gone to God with all of our cares and all of our burdens, he says, now it's time. And notice this, it's not we go to God and we get to take a break. He says, you've gone to God, so now it's time to be sober, be alert, be vigilant, because the devil is out there. The storms are coming. Be prepared to fight the devil. And when the devil comes, what does it say? We will be able to resist him in verse 9. Be steadfast in faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. We will be able to resist him. And the reason we can resist him is because we've already turned to God. We're not taking our eyes off of him like Peter did. We're humbling ourselves before God, becoming servants of God, casting all of our cares upon him, and because we are being watchful, we're being alert, we continue to go back to God. But during the storms, when those storms do come, don't let go. Peter did. Peter took his eyes off of Jesus. And it's when he let go of that eyesight with Jesus and he saw, remember what the text said? He saw everything else going on around him. That's when he began to sink. Don't let go of Jesus. Again, in verse 9, in 1 Peter chapter 5, it says, resist him, steadfast in the faith. That means we are standing firm. Even in the midst of all the storms, we could stand firm. Even when the roaring lion of the devil comes at us, we can stand firm. Because we have God. Don't let go. There's a story, and it's a sad story, that came from Hurricane Harvey. It was of a mother and a daughter. They had pulled into a movie theater parking lot to try to get out of some of the floodwaters. And as soon as they did, the floodwaters kept coming. And they noticed that they couldn't make it out of the parking lot. And so the mother grabs her 3-year-old daughter and starts getting out of the car. They were going to try to get to a safer spot because their car had stalled and couldn't go. So they were going to try to walk to a safer spot. And as soon as she gets out of the car holding her 3-year-old daughter, they both get swept away. And I think it was about a half mile they were swept down in the floodwaters. And when rescuers found them, two things happened. They found the mother, and she was supposedly holding on to something. I think she had wrapped her arm around something. And with the other hand, she was holding on to her daughter. And here's the sad part. The mother was dead. The daughter lived. And the paramedics and the rescuers that found them said, if either one of them had let go, because the daughter was, of course, clinging for her life to her mother. If either one of them had let go of that daughter, the daughter would have been dead too. But because they both held on, even in her death, that mother held on. I can't imagine. That daughter lives today. Sometimes the storms are scary. Sometimes we feel like letting go. Sometimes in all the things that we have to deal with in life, we feel like it would just be easier to just give up and let go. Jesus died so that you and I can live. If you can go back to that story for just a moment, imagine it's Jesus and you, or Jesus and me, getting swept off by the waters. Jesus died, holding on to us so that we can live. What if Jesus were to let go during his storm on the cross? We would have died too in our sins. But yet he held on during his storm. He stayed committed to the Father. He didn't let the devil get to him. He kept his eyes on God and he held on through his storm so that you and I can live. But the sad reality is that too many people are letting go of Jesus in the midst of their storms. And when the storms come and the difficult days come, people are going to blame God and Jesus instead of holding on tighter and putting their faith and humbling themselves before God. People will let go of their faith instead of realizing that it's their faith that has given them even the smallest shred of hope. That's what Jesus offers us. And it was when Peter took his eyes off Jesus that he began to sink. And that's when Jesus says, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Don't let go. Don't let go of God. Don't let go of your faith. That might be your storm. But don't let go. And lastly, and then the lesson will be yours, ask for help. One of the best things Peter did was ask Jesus to save him. "Lord, save me." I wonder how long Jesus would have let Peter fight it out while he was sinking in the storm. I don't know, like I said, I don't know how much time went by between Peter sinking and him crying out for help. But he knew where safety was. And it was in that man, I know that's not an actual photograph there, but it was in, if you can just imagine, it was in that man still standing on water. Jesus was still standing on water, and Peter had enough sense to look up and say, "This man can save me. Lord, save me." There was a ship in 1915. It was struck by a German torpedo, and it began to sink. And there was about 1,300, about 1,700 people on board. And as the ship started to sink, everyone was very quickly grabbing their life jackets and trying to put them on. However, there was a man named Charles Laureat, and he later wrote a book about this event. And he noticed as everyone was grabbing these life jackets that they were putting them on the wrong way. In the panic of what was happening, they were just grabbing life jackets. Some were putting them on backwards. Some were putting them on upside down. Some were just sticking one arm through and carrying it over their shoulder. Some, he noted in his book, one would put his arm through one armhole and his head through the other armhole. And he had his life jacket on nice and secure, and so he decided, "I'm going to stop and I'm going to help these people because they're not doing it right." And as he tries to stop and help people, they were actually trying to fight him and fight him off because they thought he was trying to steal their life jackets. They didn't want his help. But if they just would have stopped and noticed that he already had a life jacket on and accepted his help, things might have been different because, as he notes in his book, dead and drowning people were dotting the sea like seagulls. Many bodies were floating upside down because they had put their life jackets on the wrong way up so that their heads were pushed under the water. If they just would have stopped and asked for help, that in the panic of their storm, in the craziness of what was going on, they thought they knew what they were doing, but there was one person who was really willing to offer their help, and they wouldn't take it. And because of it, the dead bodies dotted the sea like seagulls. There are two choices we can make in our storms. We can keep sinking, keep gasping for air, assume that we can do it on our own. We can put our life preserver on upside down and keep treading water, but eventually we will give up. Or we can do what Peter did. Reach up and ask for help. Would it surprise you to know that if you're going through a difficult time, Peter wants to help, or Jesus wants to help you, just like he did Peter? Jesus says, "Ask and it will be given, seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened to you." He would say later in the book of Matthew, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He is saying, "Come to me and I will help." But so often we are like little children and we want to do it all by ourselves. "I can do this. I can handle this." Landon got through a time where he was learning to put his socks and shoes on by himself. And I would say, "Landon, can you put your socks on?" He'd say, "Yeah, I can do it." And he would sit there, and of course, sometimes the heel is up on the top, you know, and looks like his foot is backwards or something. And I would say, "Let me fix it." And he would say, "No, I can do it." He didn't want my help. He loves to put his shoes on by himself, and sometimes I'll put them on the wrong feet. I'll say, "You know, let's sit down and let me fix those." "No, I can do it." "Okay." Sometimes we're like that in our spiritual lives. "I can do it. I don't need help." But Jesus is always there. Jesus will save. How many of us are willing to reach up and just ask for His help? Just because the storms are happening doesn't mean we need to do it on our own. That's what we saw these last several weeks. I've been so impressed by just Christians in general, by people in general. Because there has been help needed. And although Jesus is our ultimate avenue of help, like I said at the very beginning, and why we did what we did today as a congregation, we are also commanded to help the needy saints. There are Christians, there are people willing to help if we just ask for it. And if you are going through a storm, if you are going through something in your life where you feel like you just can't possibly do it on your own anymore, or if you're not even at that point, you're going through a storm and you're still in your mind saying, I can do this, don't let yourself get to the point where you are ready to let go. Ask for help. We call ourselves a family. Well, there's a reason for that. Because we want to help each other and we love each other. When I look at Peter, I look at how he viewed Jesus during his storms. Peter had his moments of wavering faith, but Jesus was Peter's Lord before the storm, during the storm, and more importantly, even after. There are times in life where storms will make us want to give up. But don't give up on Jesus. If He really is the Lord of yesterday, today, and tomorrow too, that means He is still the Lord, your Lord, during the storms and even after. He will see us through. I want to share with you two final pictures. I actually just told Jonathan, he had my PowerPoint pulled up and ready to go, and I changed it up on him. I said, I gotta give you a new one, because I was just on Facebook last night and saw something I had to add to the end of this. And then this morning as I was adding it, Brooke said, "Did you see this other picture?" And she sent me another one, and I had to add that one too. Because it just goes to show us that after the storms, God is still there. This picture was taken yesterday in Beaumont, Texas. Some of you know where Beaumont, Texas is. Tony talked about it this last week. But here in the background, you see this house. And you see how much junk that they've had to pull onto their front porch ready to be picked up because it's now trash. And you think about what that family has been through and how much they've lost. Yet you look at the message that they were still able to say and spray paint on that old refrigerator: "God is still so good." And they've been through their storm, but they're still able to say, "God is so good." Or what about this one? Just a reminder, this is the one Brooke sent me. This is a friend of ours' house in Tampa, Florida, that even after the storm, God's promise is still there. Do you recall the storm in the book of Genesis, where the whole earth was flooded? And God gave this to us as a reminder that He made a covenant with His people that He would never destroy His people in the likes of flood again over the whole earth. That He was going to be their God and they would be His people. That's a reminder. Well, He has made a covenant with His people today, and that is the covenant of Jesus Christ. That even in the midst of storms, even when it seems like everything is swirling out of control around us, Jesus is still our Lord. And that covenant, that cross, what we did this morning, is a reminder that covenant with God still stands. He is still our God. His promises still hold true. As we read this morning, and as Jared talked to us about this morning, heaven is there waiting for us. That when the storms of this life are over, we just sang that song that right before. When the long night has ended, and the storms come no more. Let me stand in thy presence on that bright, peaceful shore. In that land where the tempest never comes, Lord, may I dwell with thee when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. I know I kept you a couple minutes over, and I apologize for that, but there are just so many people battling their storms. If you need help, now's the time to ask for it. Now is the time to turn to God. Now is the time to give your life to Him. Humble yourselves, as we read in 1 Peter, in front of Him, that He may exalt you in due time. Let Him, let us as a congregation, guide you, guide each other through our storms, so that when the storms pass by, we will have eternal rest with our Heavenly Father. If you need any help this morning, we can do that as we stand and as we sing.